Hello and welcome to the Audio Epics podcast. This is another storytelling podcast today. And today we will be talking about tabletop role-playing games. After last week's episode, we received another email from Catherine Borden, who told us that she liked the episode and she agreed with our general points that we were making about storytelling in video games. But she also mentioned that there are some very interesting indie games out there, you know, from independent developers, which do actually tell an emotional story, which do manage to do that by using completely different sorts of mechanics, leaving out all of the typical killing and looting that you get in most games, and actually putting the player at the center of an interactive storytelling experience that you could never have in a book or in a film. So I thought that was very interesting. Thank you, Catherine, for telling us about that. This week, we'll be talking about tabletop. Hello and welcome to the Audio Epic Storytelling Podcast, episode 3, I think.
Are we really gonna keep count? Because
No, perhaps not. Anyway, introducing Eileen, my lovely
Hi.
Wife. And me, also, present. So, anyway, last time we were talking about...
And my ever-lovely husband.
Last time we were talking about storytelling in video games. And to sort of continue on last week's theme, this week we're talking about storytelling in role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games. And if you don't know what those are, go away.
Because that's something entirely different from RPGs online.
Yes, or offline video RPG game things. Right. So yeah, they're all different. So
we came up with this idea, talking about storytelling in RPGs, tabletop RPGs, because... once we were at a fantasy convention in the Netherlands, and there was this fantasy author who gave advice to aspiring authors, and he said, rule number one, your role-playing campaign is not a good fantasy story.
Yeah, tell that to Raymond E. Feist, whose entire career was based on turning his... D&D campaign into a novel which became one of the most best-selling fantasy novels of all time. And also Weiss and Hickman did the same thing with the Dragonlance series.
Okay, so thanks for that piece of advice.
That guy was wrong. So here ends the podcast.
No, I think he probably has a point in that you cannot just take your role-playing campaign and then copy-paste it in a Word document and send it to a publisher.
No. People will say, what are all these statistics? No.
He rolled one d6 and monster did two.
Apparently, I recently discovered that there is this new subgenre in novels. And it's called, I thought it was called RPG Lit or something. And what it is, it really is a game told as a novel. So it's a fantasy story, but the book really describes how the character levels up and kind of equipment that he chooses.
Then we're saved. You can simply just upload all your former D&D campaigns and then make them into audio dramas. And we have 10 years of audio drama covered.
Yeah, good point. But I haven't read or listened to that kind of stuff. I find it hard to imagine that it would really be any good, but...
It can't be very immersive, right?
Well, apparently that's the idea, to make it immersive. Hmm. I think there's an element of humor to it
as well. Are they actually mentioning the dice?
That I don't know. I all I know is they mention leveling up and experience and loot and, you know, the whole thing. Yeah.
Okay. And the wizard leveled up.
Yeah. And he and chose Ball of Fire. I know, it's strange.
It's strange, yeah.
Anyway, so we've been playing tabletop RPGs for a long time. Personally, me, I've always enjoyed being the guy behind the screen, mostly to hide my face, but also because I really enjoy storytelling, obviously. But, you know, I know people who vastly prefer playing a character and who would never want to be the GM or the DM.
Right.
Everybody's different.
It takes a lot of preparation, too.
It does. It does.
Especially if you want to tell your own story, I imagine. There are, of course, a number of books where you have these pre-written stories.
Yeah, definitely. Sure, yeah. Published campaigns and adventures. Yeah. I kind of have a double feeling towards those. On the one hand, they can be really good and I can really enjoy them. But on the other hand, I like telling my own stories and there's just a lot of fun in that.
Yeah, but it is even more work. More as well. They stuck more.
They did?
Yeah, I think so. Although I thought the stories from Warhammer were really, yes, really atmospheric. I really love those.
Well, obviously, I mean, we created Witch Hunter. It won't be a big surprise to find out that we've been playing Warhammer Fantasy roleplay for a long time. Obviously.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and I've got the Enemy Within campaign, which everybody says is like the best campaign ever made, but we haven't played it yet. But after that, we played Dungeons and Dragons for a while, and those were all stories that we sort of came up with ourselves. And there's a part of the fun of role-playing games, I think, is that you can do that. And as a player as well, you can create your own character and come up with something completely unique. Like, you once had a very interesting character, didn't you?
Are you referring to the
Jiminy Garlington was his name.
Oh, yeah. I had a gnome as a character, which was in the play system of 13H, I believe. Yeah. And he was the only gnome contortionist, and he was also very good with the ladies.
That was a very fun character.
Yeah, also very weird, but it was fun to play. Well, there are some typical elements in storytelling in RPGs. If you look at the stories they have in each system, there are a number of very talented authors behind them. But they usually start in an inn.
Yeah, that's the number one cliche.
Where the characters meet and then someone has a quest. And
yeah. Yeah, if you read the first Dragonlance novel by Weiss and Hickman, it actually starts with characters meeting in an inn.
Well, it's a cliche, but it's charming, right?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I like good old-fashioned cliches. My opinion has always been, I like old cliches, but I hate new cliches. Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
Okay.
Like prophecies. We will do a podcast on prophecies and destiny too.
I do think that tabletop RPG stories are different from video game stories. They're a bit more open. They're a bit more free. Mm-hmm. And one of the really awesome things about tabletop games, and a video game can never ever do that, is that if you got a player in your group, and they tell you the backstory of their character, and they say, oh, my character was raped by a Minotaur once, for example. I'm just
not based on actual...
not based on anything. Not like I know anyone who would actually come up with that.
Oh,
but but if, I mean, for example, if someone mentions that, you could, as a DM... You could think, aha, okay. So I introduce this in my storyline, this Minotaur character, who is actually really a good guy. But, you know, how will she react to that? Because, you know, her experience is that Minotaurs are rapists.
Okay. Yeah, right. That first session is also very important. You don't really get to play the story yet because often, especially when you play with people who are new to tabletop role-playing games, you still need to go through character creation, which takes a fairly long time. But it's also a very good time to listen as a games master to all the background stories and elements that these people come up with. And what I have noticed, actually, with people playing with us who hadn't played tabletop games before or who didn't have experience with creating stories, that they do come up with very original ideas. And
definitely, yeah.
They kind of grow into their character as well.
Definitely, yeah. But on the other hand, there is sometimes the element, and it's a fine balance, the balance between game and pure storytelling. For example, we were playing not too long ago with one of our friends who hadn't played a tabletop RPG before. And at one point, somebody, I don't quite remember what it was, but somebody was wounded. And she said, okay, so I've got a potion. And she didn't, actually. She just imagined that she had a potion because she thought, you know, it's a sort of shared storytelling experience. Yeah. So I can sort of conjure that up in my imagination and it's there. And then, of course, as a games master, you have to sort of pull that back and say, oh, wait, okay, so yes, on the one hand, you're free to imagine things, but on the other hand, there are these clear boundaries and you can't, because otherwise the game element is lost, obviously.
Yeah, but you didn't want to screw up her enthusiasm, so
no.
I remember you didn't poop the party and you just mentioned it, but you allowed it as well for that one time.
I told her that she found a potion somewhere in, because it was in a place where you might actually find a potion.
Oh,
so
I save them.
That's the way, it's sort of the sort of thing you have to kind of learn as a games master, is on the one hand to give the players what they want, but on the other hand to also challenge them and restrict them. It's like parenting.
Yeah. And you don't want to just stick with those rules at all times.
No.
And be this kind of rules Nazi.
No, but indeed that's one of the pitfalls. But then again, the other extreme is just as bad, if not worse, where you just ignore the rules and you just do whatever comes up. It's like life, I think. It's finding that sort of
balance.
Yeah.
And also finding a balance within the group you're playing with, because one player will probably like fighting and action, and another player will probably love puzzles and riddles more. It's kind of keeping the balance so that everyone has fun without
yes.
it just being one thing the whole time.
Yes, that's true. I think that tabletop games can do a bunch of cool stuff that no other medium can do, that certainly video games cannot do. And one of those things is, as I said, adapt to other players in very creative ways.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is just having a shared storytelling experience is unique. Everybody contributes in a way to what the story is. Everybody imagines in their heads simultaneously what is happening,
right,
and contributes to it.
Like I said before, it's in tabletop roleplay, it's less about immersion. Of course, I don't mean like that immersion is not important. It's more like it's a different kind of immersion.
Yeah.
In role-playing games, video games, I prefer to be this lone explorer and then really be in the atmosphere and experience everything firsthand. In a role-playing game, it's about cooperating, telling the story together, experiencing it together. And it's also something you remember afterwards. I think you all have this shared experience.
I very often, when we've played a role-playing game, I will remember the story, I will remember scenes from it afterwards as if it was a movie that I saw.
Right. Yeah.
You've got that too?
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, very often, it's more memorable than a book, I think.
True.
It sticks with you more somehow because you were there in a way. Yeah, it's just, I think it's something really magical, and I love the fact that you don't need any technology for it. You just need some paper, some dice, maybe some figurines.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's a bit of the downside of using figurines. I really love playing with them, and I think they have contributed to a lot of stories that we've played in the past. But the ones that I really imagine, like if they were a movie,
yeah,
those were without the backgrounds and the figurines. They
That's
were more
true.
Like freestyle role-playing games.
The same is true for me. I think the figurines are good for fighting scenes that are more like a game, where it's more about...
Yeah.
You know, which cool ability should I use now, etc. And not using the figurines works better when it's really just about journeying and meeting new characters and locations and speaking to people. And recently, I purchased the Lord of the Rings role-playing game, The One Ring, and I've been reading through the books, and I think they are absolutely wonderful. The art is extremely evocative of Tolkien's writing. But what really struck me about the system that I thought was really interesting is how much it emphasizes travel, how much it emphasizes the journey.
Right.
Which is often overlooked in other games. But in this one, you know, you get a map of Middle Earth, and you know, if you want to get somewhere, for example, the characters are in Lake Town, and they have to get to Gondor or something. You really have to think about, okay, so should we travel by the river or through the woods? And it's a different experience based on what path you choose to take. And
right,
I'd love to try that out, to see how it feels when you play it. But
right, I remember the games that stuck with me most were the ones where there was a lot of traveling about, like the one with the island, where you have all kinds of different locations and you kind of remember the journey of getting there. Well, it's kind of the games master job to describe it, of course. And to describe some encounters if they're there, to give you choices. Do you take the short cut, which is more dangerous, or the long road, which is more scenic? And yeah, I think that's very important in a good RPG story.
I also really just enjoy interacting. As a games master, I really enjoy it when I get to play an NPC that the characters meet and talk to, because, you know, you want to make them memorable. So every time I try to come up with some quirk or speech defect or, you know, accent or voice thing, or maybe a little, I don't know, gesture that the character does to sort of make them stand out, you know, like
right,
there's the innkeeper who always blows through his mustache, or there's the guy with the lisp. Or, you know, and that's one of the, that's something that I find just a lot of fun.
The creepy guy who everyone suspects, but who turns out to be actually just a good guy.
Yeah. yeah, you always got to have one of those.
yeah.
Especially in a horror scenario, you know.
Yeah, or a Warhammer story.
Well, everybody's creepy in Warhammer.
Yeah, that's true. It's always hard to find a good group because they're all... these cliches, we've met them all.
Yeah, the rules lawyer, the guy always wants to be the bad guy, the guy who only wants to fight, the guy who wants to make every encounter a sexual encounter.
Even if it is with a corpse.
You know, they're all there.
Yeah.
We've met them all, we've played with them all.
It's an interesting experience.
And I'm probably a stereotype myself. I don't know which one, but the thing with RPGs is it's potentially the most awesome type of game you could ever play, but you need to play it with the right people. And that is difficult.
Yeah, and you also have to get into it, give it a chance, because there are lots of people who haven't played it before, and they really need to defrost a bit. It's kind that, of yeah. awkward the first time.
That's true. Yeah.
Not everyone is into really acting or role playing their characters, and I understand that, and you shouldn't push them as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. When I say the right people, I don't mean you have to be worthy to participate or something. That's not what I meant.
It's about getting the right players in the same party in the right system. And that's hard, because it's so many elements that you have to reckon with that it becomes difficult. Okay, let's talk about RPG tabletop cliches that work.
Yeah.
According to you.
Well, yeah. Because I think in a tabletop game, cliches are just, they are there to be used. Do not avoid cliches. Because I know, really.
Yeah, I was thinking about an example when we had this role-playing session when someone was Dungeon Master, I think. Was it D&D?
It could be. I don't know what you're going to say.
And he really tried to be inventive. But the story turned out to be really, really weird.
Because of trying to avoid the cliches.
Yeah. For example, we were the heroes, and then we got wind up in a battle with these skeletons.
Oh, right.
Which
yeah.
were minions. So whatever you did, they died, but they immediately resurrected.
Yeah, but that's not just avoiding, that's also just misuse of rules.
Yeah, I think what I wanted to say is rules are important. You don't have to be a rules Nazi, but if you lots of guys who are into role playing games and want to be dungeon masters, they have something like, you know, it's more like actual guidelines. I'm going to make my own set of rules. And then you end up with things like that. And then we didn't really have fun during the battle, because, you know, you killed skeletons, they just resurrected. And then in the end, an NPC character by the Dungeon Master landed on a dragon and saved everyone. And then we got rewarded as heroes for being a hero while we had...
Didn't do anything.
We looked at each other, we were like, we didn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, I think there are several problems with that scenario. For one thing, I think if you just... ignore rules and completely throw them out and do something completely different than what the rule book says, it's kind of like having a table and you say, you know, I don't need this leg.
Right.
So I'm just going to saw it off. You know, the whole table will collapse. The whole game collapses if you just ignore rules. I mean, small rules, okay, but I mean... like the entire way the combat works, you just completely chuck that out, and I think that the whole feel of risk and adventure and reward, etc., it just completely collapses.
There's a reason why they're there, and you should respect them. And I think that's the difficulty of a good of creating a good role playing game, is reckoning with those rules and still managing to make a story that's fun and personal and engaging. But you always have to reckon with those rules. It's kind of a limitation you have, but limitations often just make you more creative, because you have to solve problems that way.
Yes, I agree. And the other problem with what that guy was doing, you know, was that the real hero was an NPC. He was the real hero. We weren't. We were just there to enjoy the show, and then it becomes a one man show with the DM as the main character, and that's I think breaking a cardinal rule of what role playing games are about.
And I remember that as a player,
the players are the heroes.
As a player, he always tended to do the exact opposite from the rest of the group. He always wandered off on his own. And he came up with these ideas like, hey, DM, wouldn't it be cool if I turned out to be an ally of the bad guy? Something like that. I think it's important when you play tabletop roleplay that the story is about having a goal together.
Yes.
And working towards that goal together. If you have people who want to be the center of the game and have this separate quest and wander off from the group, that takes away the fun for the other players.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those types of player, the one who always wants, one of those cliches, the player who always wants all the attention. It's a real thing. They exist. And how do you deal with that? Well, you give them some attention, but you make sure they don't hog all the attention.
Right. That's the cool thing about role-playing games, is that you experience a story together.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're villains, they're outside of the party. But as a party, you work together. Mm-hmm. You have all these complementary talents.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a good group, you kind of reckon with each other's strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of make sure not everyone in the group has the same class. And then you can really have a lot of fun.
I agree. And that's why, and I think this is another controversial statement from me, but that's why I'm really against playing as evil characters. I know that D&D allows for playing as an evil character, but I really don't believe that that really works.
In Star Wars,
I think they should just cut it out of the game. Star Wars, actually, no. In Star Wars, if you become
a Sith?
If you become evil, you lose your character.
Okay.
You get punished for being evil. If you play as a Jedi, you are at extra risk of that. And I know also in the One Ring role playing game, also you're always expected to be the hero, to be the good guy.
Yeah.
There are Luke Skywalkers and there are Han Solos, you know?
Right.
You don't all have to be the noble knight in shining armor.
Lawful good, yeah. And chaotic good.
But a straight up psychopath does not work, I think, because...
Not in a group.
No, exactly. You have to play in a group.
Yeah.
You are a group and you set out to achieve certain things. You know, you meet people along the way, usually helpless NPCs. They want your help. If you play as pure bad guys, I mean, what are you going to do? Just burn every village? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it becomes very boring very quickly.
And that's why a tabletop RPG story is often very simple, again, because you have this common villain or common goal. Therefore, probably the guy argued that a role-playing game is not a good novel, because nowadays a fantasy novel should have all these interesting original twists and stuff and have these morally gray characters instead of just good and evil. But I think it does work sometimes. I just think it depends on what kind of fantasy story do you want to read. I think people nowadays still very much enjoy The Lord of the Rings, which is not about cliche characters, but it's still about good versus evil very clearly.
Yeah, but The Lord of the Rings is not about flawless good characters against pure evil. It's not that. That's not what The Lord of the Rings
not.
Is. It's actually, I think The Lord of the Rings represents moral reality. It's about flawed characters who are trying to do the right thing.
True.
Facing an evil that is really just moral emptiness. It's just a lack of anything creative and positive. That's what the Nazgul are. They don't have an essence.
And in a way, tabletop roleplay is about that as well, because you have these heroes, but they are complementary. They have different talents and vices. Mm-hmm. In 13th Age, you actually had a vice. You had to pick a vice.
Mm-hmm.
And one unique thing, something that no one else on the planet or world in that world could do. And I think that's interesting because you don't have these flawless good characters, mm-hmm. but you have these very round characters mm-hmm. who cooperate. And one will be better at diplomacy and the other one will really suck at it and just wave his axle around all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
But sometimes you really need that guy.
Yeah. And then it's perfectly fine that you fight against just pure evil, you know? Pure faceless evil with no redeeming features whatsoever. In fact, I think that's more fun. You know, that's why there are orcs in fantasy games, zombies, undead, something that doesn't have a right to exist.
And I do think that a tabletop role-playing campaign makes for excellent inspiration for writers. So a lot of writers are also dungeon masters or games masters. And I think a lot of writers also play role-playing games because it's one big source of inspiration. And lots of the inspiration just comes from what happens between the players and the characters and what actually unfolds before you.
I find it very inspiring, definitely. I've actually written characters in some of our audio epics, audio dramas and audio books that were based on characters that were in our role-playing games. Not a gnome contortionist so far, but...
not yet.
Not yet, but who knows?
So in that sense, a lot of our friends have not only contributed to the voices, but also to the story.
And yes.
Inspired us to...
Yes, there's something that happens when you bring a bunch of different minds together and they form a story together. You get something that contains so many unique elements that you wouldn't have if it was all just one guy. But then again, you do need this one guy to sort of be the referee and rein it all in, and or girl, I mean.
Like you need a guy to manage or moderate meetings as well.
Yeah.
Or like brainstorm sessions before they get out of hand.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you need a core vision of what it is that you're creating. And in that sense, role-playing games, I think tabletop role-playing games are a great exercise in cooperating, in shared storytelling, doing math in your head,
calculating,
which I'm really bad at. using your imagination, even real life social skills.
And it's a memory game as well because you always forget one perk or skill. The good thing is that it's always the games master and a player.
Yes.
You forget some perk or skill so that it kind of evens out. But you always forget something.
Yeah. There's this cliche, maybe not anymore, but there used to be this cliche around people who play role-playing games being these, you know, this sort of sequestered, nerdy types who could never get a girlfriend and who are, you know, really socially awkward, etc. But I think... That's really a bunch of nonsense because...
Dorky nerds with glasses the size of plates.
I mean,
wait,
sure.
That's actually a thing now.
But really, far more than video games, role-playing games are social. You know, they require personality to play them. But, you know, it's a great exercise to sort of get out of your shell and...
True.
You meet new people and...
I think it has helped me in a way because I'm usually the shy type.
Yeah.
And playing a character is kind of different than just being yourself. It's kind of safe. It eases you into real social contact.
Yeah, also true. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Maybe that's why it attracts a certain kind of more shy, retiring kind of person because... Because it allows them to sort of grow out of that a bit.
Yeah, and train their social skills within the safe boundaries of a character.
But really, between spending your evening binging on a Netflix show or sitting around a table with friends and telling a story together and laughing and throwing dice, I mean...
Yeah, it's definitely more memorable. I usually forget about when I have binge-watched a series, I forget about more than half of the episodes. But most of the episodes we had in a tabletop roleplay setting, I do at least remember scenes of it very accurately, actually. We've talked mainly about fantasy RPGs, of course, because we don't have much experience with other genres other than World of Darkness, which is actually a bit fantasy as well. So
I don't know many people who play realistic role-playing games, as in, I don't know, sort of, what would that be? Something like maybe some espionage sort of Mission Impossible type stuff, maybe. I guess that could be fun, but I don't really know a system like that.
Well, if you have experience playing games like that, we would love to hear about your experiences as well. So so please share your experiences with role-playing games. What do you like about them? What are the storytelling elements in role-playing games that you really like?
Do you have any favorite systems and why? And what's your ideal group like, your ideal DM?
Oh, and please share funny stories about role-playing sessions, because that might always inspire us for future characters or stories that we still want to tell.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, it's been great talking to you once more. It's sort of what we do best, isn't it? Talking to each other. So,
that's kind of our deal.
Yeah, it's kind of our deal. Okay, so thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Right, bye.
So that was our discussion for this week. Next week's episode will be about children's TV shows. That's right. It's something completely different. But it was an interesting talk, because we discussed some of the crazy things that you see in TV shows for children. If you are watching this or listening to this on YouTube, please subscribe, like, comment, all of that is good. And of course, you can find our own audio dramas, our own stories, on audio-epics.com. There is also the Audio Epics Facebook page, and we are also present on Twitter. Talk to you next week.